Dum Dum away!
0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011 0011
Welcome to Screen Review Time Warp. I'm Tyson.
And I'm Andrew.
And I'm Zach.
And here is where we talk about the past, present, and future of all things TV and movies. So, without further ado, let's start. I'm going to start in the past with a old favorite of mine, Stardust. Now, Stardust is it's a wonderful fantasy fairy tale coming of age. Basically, it stars Charlie Cox in what I believe is possibly his first really big role. Yeah. Like, he was obviously in stuff before that, but as far as I can tell, it was one of his
first motion
big ones.
Picture.
And basically, he's kind of an awkward teenager, kind of, well, he's a bit old and teenager, and he's in love with this girl called Victoria, and he's trying to win her heart, but she's actually, she really, really likes Henry Cavill. One of his first films as well. Or maybe not his first, but, and so Charlie Cox is like smitten by her, and he's just like the awkward guy, and he pledges that he will go and find the fallen star that they've seen when they were out on a picnic. They see a shooting star and it lands. He's like, I would cross the wall and find that fallen star for you. And part of the mythos of this particular place is that they do not cross the wall. There is a wall on the edge of their town, and it's been guarded for hundreds of years because there's one small hole in it. And he's, I'm going to cross the wall, the fallen star. So he goes out and he does make his way through the wall, and he discovers, he enters this land of Stormhold, where there are giants and witches and an evil king and magic, and the fallen star is actually a person played by Claire Danes. And so it's a really wonderful coming of age story about him, about Charlie Cox's character, Tristan, trying to find himself and trying to, really just work out who he is. And it's actually really good because the transformation that happens to Charlie Cox's character from the start to the finish is, you don't really notice it, but then he has this interaction back again with Henry Cavill's character.
Humphrey, I think his name is.
Humphrey, yes, thank you very much, yep. And and it's, you kind of notice, you're like, well, he's completely, completely different to where he was before. It's a wonderful, wonderful movie. Have you guys seen it?
Yes, I have seen this movie. It was, I enjoyed it. Mm. It was just something different. I don't know if it's based off a book.
It is.
Yeah. It is based off a book.
I was just going to say that. Neil Gaiman actually did a novel for that. That's very interesting. He's a very critically acclaimed author.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, he's always been quite a critically acclaimed author, but his adaptations to screen have not always been. So at the moment, he's got American Gods, which is huge and like massively expensive budget. Good Omens, which is a book he did with Terry Pratchett, which I would highly recommend.
Yep.
That's being adapted as well. And what was his other one? This was possibly his first successful adaptation.
Okay.
He had a TV show called Neverwhere before that, which was also that one was actually turned into a book. The book is phenomenal. The TV show is the most low-budget, terrible thing ever. So this is an adaptation of his book. The book is fantastic as well.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it, man. It was just a good watch, you know. It's an easy sit-down watch, that's for sure.
He wrote the Sandman.
Yes,
Sandman
he did.
Comics.
Yeah,
he was
responsible for revitalizing the Sandman series and turning it into the acclaimed series that it is.
There you go.
Lucifer, he also credited the characters for. TV show called Lucifer.
Oh, that's a... Yeah, that's... They just had a season 2 come out.
Yes, or even a season 3, maybe.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Matthew Vaughn directed it as well.
Yes, he did. So I was looking this up, and I'm actually surprised this movie even got made because... Well, not surprised per se, but it's a weird mix of, like, massive budget actors. So it's got Ian McKellen as the narrator. It's got Claire Danes in it, Robert De Niro, Michelle Pfeiffer in it as well.
Okay. Ricky Gervais as well.
Yeah, Ricky Gervais.
Gervais, man.
And then it's also populated by a handful of British actors and actresses who you would probably recognize if you're familiar with some British TV, but for an American audience, might not realize. Certainly not then. So it was made in 2007, so 10 years ago now.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of look at it and it's like, it was Matthew Vaughn's second writing and directing gig.
Yeah, he did Layer Cake first. That's right. 2004.
Yep. Layer Cake with Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig,
yep.
And Jane Goodman.
Yep.
Yeah, Jane Goodman.
Goldman, sorry.
Yep. Yeah, she. It was her kind of first writing gig as well. So both of them had done Layer Cake.
Mm.
They also both wrote Kick-Ass, X-Men, First Class,
and all of
the Kingsman movies as well.
Yeah.
And so...
Writing partners, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, yep. And so, yeah, it was their first kind of big thing. And, I look at it and I'm like, so Neil Gaiman didn't really have anything big that was adapted before that.
Mm.
They hadn't really written anything big before that. I mean, Layer Cake wasn't small, but it wasn't a blockbuster.
Yeah, it was definitely more a niche, art housey film that was big in Britain, yeah.
And then you put this, you put Charlie Cox, who was kind of still new-ish at the time, as the main lead.
Yeah,
and you're definitely. like, don't get me wrong, I am so glad that it got made because it's brilliant and quirky and wonderful, but I kind of look and go, I feel that someone probably took a risk on this.
Yeah. I mean, it's critically acclaimed as well from what I'm reading out. 7.7 IMDb user score.
Yep.
I feel like, just me personally, the user score on IMDb is a good indicator of how it resonates with the audiences.
Yeah.
Because nothing wrong with critics, but sometimes they just don't know their stuff. 66 Metascore. That's respectable. That's pretty decent.
Yeah.
Do you know how it went out the box office? Was it a...
I don't think it went fantastic. Like, I think it was... Like, it wasn't bad. It came out. But it is a bit quirky. So, it's... So, obviously, you got this kind of mixed reality of, like... So, it's kind of... like, the 1800s in England.
Yeah.
And then this fantasy world. And then you've got... in the kind of classic Neil Gaiman style, it's not a very classical fantasy. You've got this evil king who has... I think it's 7 sons.
Mm-hmm.
And... the person to get the throne is the one who kills the rest of them.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so
nice.
The reason that the star was fallen was because he takes their family jewel that was around his neck and he's like, I'm about to die and there's still 4 of you left. And then one of them gets pushed out the window. Okay. So there's 3 of them left, like in that scene.
Yeah.
So
from the very second he dies, they start killing each other
exactly,
off.
Exactly, yeah. And so he gloats about how he'd killed all of his brothers before his dad was even sick. And, you know, oh, you're all a disappointment to me because there's still 3 of you left, you know. And the other 4 hang around as ghosts, like watching to see who's going to actually become the king.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he actually strikes the star down. And so Charlie Cox's character is trying to find... So Tristan's trying to find the star and the princes are trying to find the star.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all trying to, like, kill each other and poison each other. They accidentally poison a priest and kill him when they're trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's this weird kind of quirky magic... it's brilliant. I would highly recommend it. Highly, highly recommend
Even just the mashup of like 1800s England and, you know, you've got all these fairy tale aspects and stuff.
Mm.
Whenever that mashup does really occur, it does really make for just such an interesting world building and just lore and just really nice aesthetics, I feel like.
Yeah.
Whenever you've got this kind of mashing of different time periods. And I mean, it has to be done well in order for it to look good. I mean, I would say Peter Jackson does... I mean, do it very well, I feel like.
I agree.
Yeah. No. We'll definitely give it a watch.
Wonderful. Also, you haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it. Oh. I have heard about it because obviously Charlie Cox being dead, I'm debating him. And also a fan of Matthew Vaughn's as well. So it's always been in the back of my mind to watch.
I feel that Matthew Vaughn's name has come up like a dozen times in the last few episodes we've
done. I mean, I love Kingsman and I loved the X-Men First Class and Days of Future Past. Even though he didn't direct it, he did write it. So
That's right.
Yep.
Mm.
Good.
Very good. Good. All right. Andrew, what do we got?
I recently went back and watched The Dark Knight again, the Christopher Nolan verse, universe that he created with Christian Bale as Batman and Heath Ledger as the Joker.
Iconic. Mm.
The most iconic version of the Joker as far as I am concerned.
Definitely
defined the role moving forward, that's for sure.
Mm.
That's right, yeah.
But it's the second installment.
Yep.
That he did as well.
Yep.
So why don't you, just in case there's someone out there who hasn't seen The Dark Knight, why don't you give us a...
Batman.
a synopsis of this particular film.
So the film... to be honest, what is a synopsis?
So just kind of like give us a rundown of like what the film is about, why, yeah. like, you know, oh, so it's the second film in the series, yep.
Yeah, so it's when a menace of the Joker emerges in his mysterious past, he wreaks havoc and chaos throughout Gotham and the Dark Knight. Must accept that one of his greatest physical and physical abilities is to fight for justice.
Mm.
You know? So obviously the Joker shows up, and this is the first, in this rendition, the first time that he's met the Joker.
Mm. Yep.
And coming up against him, realizes he's kind of met his match because, you know, Batman stands for justice and doing everything right in the right way. He has everything planned out.
Yep.
Then he meets just sheer chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't even like, he definitely met his match, but not physically, so much mentally, because what is portrayed in this film so well, it's just Batman's just ethical and just moral, just dilemma. I mean, right now, I mean, it has been like presented in like so many different video games and movies now. So it is quite, and comics as well, very common. Mm. But the way Nolan really deals with it, it's just awesome. Like, you just see the struggle of Bruce wanting to save people from getting killed, but in order to do that, he realizes he has to kill the Joker, but he doesn't want to do that because he doesn't kill. It's just...
He sees that as his only option, but he doesn't want to accept that that's his option.
Exactly. And I feel like this film isn't really a superhero film. It's more classified as like... People classify it as like a noir crime drama.
Yeah. It's like if you took Batman and put him in the real world, not in...
Yeah.
A comic book world.
Which I think is why this film is so critically acclaimed, because it's just not a superhero film. It's a crime-driven...
Yeah, it's very much based in reality. Like, you could you could essentially remove the Batman costume and just give him a mask, and it would be a crime noir, like, gritty kind of investigation. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes out of any movie ever comes from The Dark Knight. Now, I am a massive Batman fan. Like, I have, on our bookshelf, we have a section that is just for comics.
Yeah.
And then another section that is just for Batman comics. So I love, like, I am, well, yep, just, I'm going to be biased no matter what. But there's this one scene where Batman has gone through the whole, it's kind of near the end of the movie, he's gone through this whole ordeal. He's tracked the Joker down. The Joker's done all this, like, stupidly, chaotically evil kind of business, and eventually Batman like kicks him off the building, and the Joker's like laughing as he plummets down, and obviously Batman, because he doesn't kill, he, you know, shoots him with the harpoon and hooks him up, and he pulls him up, and there's this scene where the Joker is explaining to him about how they are the day and night of each other.
Yeah.
And how you know, the Joker exists because Batman exists. And then he says this line, he goes, "It looks like you and I are destined to do this forever."
Mm. Yeah.
Oh.
That's a perfect way to end it.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I was just like, because I mean, Batman's, what, 70 years, 80 years?
He's now? About 75, I think.
Yeah. So even if we take it back, like, you know, 10 years, so that's 55 years.
Mm.
Like, it really is that Batman and Joker are destined to do this forever, because they are the opposite of each other.
Yeah.
Oh, it's brilliant. I absolutely love it.
And it's what Heath Ledger just brought to the table as the Joker. Like, that is the pure definition of what the Joker is. He's funny on one hand, but then he's also so evil within a split second as well.
Yeah.
Like, you look back at all those lines that he delivered throughout the movies, like, he'll be like giggling away, and then he'll have that really deep voice. Like, when he captures that fake Batman, and he's like, got him.
That's
like,
right.
And he puts him on the news. He's like, "Look at me." And he's like, "Look at me.
Look at me."
And that that freaked me out. I was like, "Oh my goodness, this is the Joker."
Yeah,
you know.
It was so much so that scary. He just doesn't care about money. Yeah. He just wants to throw the whole world into chaos.
Yeah, well, he has
just,
that one scene, doesn't he? Exactly. Like, all you care about is money, and then like torches the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, with Christopher Nolan directing it as well, it just makes it so much,
it was just perfect.
So much more grounded, because Nolan, I mean, we probably discussed this in our Dunkirk episode, how he's such a realist filmmaker.
Yes, that's right.
Like, next to not next to none, but as limited use of CGI as possible, all the stunts and fight scenes are real. That scene with the truck, Joker's driving, just flips on it.
Yeah.
All done real.
It was all done real.
Yeah.
Took him ages to get that right.
It did.
That scene in Hong Kong where he jumps off the building.
Yep, that was done.
They wanted to do that for real, but the actual jumping off the building, that was a bit more CGI, because they couldn't actually do it. If you watch the behind the scenes, they were just like, "It's just not physically possible to do this right."
Yeah.
So we can't do it, unfortunately. Yeah. But it still looked outstanding. Mm.
And
so good.
On a Hans Zimmer score as well. Oh, it's just sensational.
Brilliant.
Oh, so good.
But you can tell with Heath Ledger in this, he definitely did his homework.
Very much so.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
but then you look at someone like, say, Jared Leto, who's the new rendition of the Joker. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
What do you think? Go on.
Okay, so I feel like for Jared Leto, there was always going to be this expectation of him. Oh, he's going to live up to Heath Ledger's legacy.
Yeah, very hard shoes to fill.
Exactly, because I know it's even more tragic that Heath Ledger unfortunately died before this film, as they finished shooting. But I think also Jared Leto, he kind of really can't do the same as Heath Ledger. He has to be different.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I understand he has to be different, but the different that he chose, I'm just like, that's not Joker.
Yeah, well, I feel like it was just a different gangster mob boss kind of Joker, just a different aspect of him.
But there still wasn't even that chaos. It was still, like, he still was structured.
He was structured. I feel like he was quite, he was still, like, crazy and just unhinged. Like, you saw that scene in Suicide Squad with Common, I don't know what his name was, the rapper Common, where he's like, oh, do you like Harley? Do you like my girl? And he's like, nah, that's your girl, Joker. Yeah. And then he just like gets offended and he just shoots him in the face, like right there. I mean, look, there was some
Because I think that scene for me, what I struggle was like, I can never see the Joker just sat in a nightclub, enjoying the surroundings.
Yeah.
I'm just like, that's not, he wouldn't be doing that, you know, but that's just my personal opinion.
Okay.
Well, I think there's a difficulty with the Joker of trying to ground him in reality, considering he's such a ungrounded character. I don't know. I like Jared Leto's Joker. The only problem I have with it is that he, I think that he likes Harley a bit too much. And always in the comics, she was just kind of there. And so, yeah, I think there's a couple of behaviors that he does that are just like, oh, you know, I've got to save Harley. And he just doesn't do that in his normal kind of character, but apart from that, as you said, Zach, it's 100% true. He had big shoes to fill.
Yep.
There's no way he could have done it the same way as Heath Ledger and been have it received well.
Yeah.
So he chose to go the opposite. And and the other thing as well, I mean, really, his choice of how he does, like how he's behaving to Harley, that's not so much his choice. No. That's a scripting thing. So
bad script.
Yeah. So I don't know. I liked it. I think
I did enjoy it as well.
I thought it was very good. I thought he had that chaotic element to him, which was well received. But I think I mean, it's also
a little bit Jim Carrey.
A little bit, yeah. But also, I mean, being in Suicide Squad, that's I don't think Suicide Squad was as bad as everyone claimed, but it wasn't as good. I think it's their weakest kind of so far.
Yeah,
it was definitely. But back to The Dark Knight, brilliant film.
Brilliant film. I mean, also the introduction of Harvey Dent.
That's right. Played by Aaron Eckhart.
Yep,
Aaron Eckhart. Really good, man. I haven't seen him in a lot, just in general, but in that he delivered it like...
He did Saw.
Oh, man. He like... What analogy am I trying to think here? Nail on the coffin. He was like just really good.
He definitely gave it that. You could see he was struggling with two sides of himself. The good lawyer that talks nicely and then just the real deep, like, you're going to tell me.
Especially after Maggie Gyllenhaal's character dies.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was actually
Rachel.
Where they changed the
Actress.
Changed the actress, but they also changed the origin of how Two-Face got his Two-Face.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, because in the comics he gets splashed with acid in the courtroom, and obviously in this one he doesn't.
He has his face resting in some fuel.
Yep.
Fuel, which then catches on fire.
And then when the building explodes, it sets him on fire.
Mm.
Which I thought was good. And then the whole CGI for him having two faces and seeing through and all the tendons in his mouth.
That was so well done. That was good. I actually saw a shot recently.
Yeah.
A shot recently. It was just a still of the... So someone took an image of what it looked like.
And then with all the dots
on. Yeah. Yeah. And then what it looked like. And I was like, it's seamless. Like, it was so well layered on top of him. But brilliant.
Yep.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Well, I guess it's my turn now.
Yeah. So what are you bringing from the past, Zach?
Well, from the past, I'm bringing, it's not so like old, but a TV show called Rick and Morty. So Rick and Morty, I'm going to be doing season one of this show. So if you don't know, Rick and Morty is an animated series that follows the exploits of a super smart scientist, and his not so bright grandson. So you've got Rick, who is this phenomenal genius, but he's also an extreme alcoholic and just he's an extreme alcoholic and just does not care about anyone's needs except himself. And then you've got Morty, who's his teenager grandson, who's pretty insecure, and his parents are kind of in a bad relationship, so he kind of looks up to his grandpa heaps. Now this show has quite the following just in general throughout the world. I wouldn't say cult. I'd say it's actually quite global.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's still a very cult following. Like, people who are into this show are very into this show.
Yeah. I mean, myself included.
Yep.
One thing I love, so this was created by Dan Harmon, who actually created Community as well.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, so it's co-created by Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland. Justin Roiland is the voice of both Rick and Morty.
Really?
Yeah, he's the voice of both of them and many other characters in the show.
Wow.
This show is so random. Like,
it seems random.
One of the episode three is called Anatomy Park, and it's basically about... Morty going inside this hobo off the streets into his body, where Rick has set up a whole theme park in his body, and it's called Anatomy Park. So it's obviously like a rip on Jurassic Park, but there's like rides like Pirates of the Pancreas and stuff like that. And,
oh wow!
Yeah, it's hilarious. So
but it has a huge following, doesn't it, Rick and Morty?
Massive following, because these characters they definitely have their own humor about them,
yeah.
And the first episode, the pilot, is okay. It's nothing compared to like the other episodes of Grey.
But you find that with most of these cartoony shows.
Yeah.
Like
it is animated, sorry, I should have said.
You had, what was it, South Park first?
Yeah.
Oh, no, sorry, Simpsons first.
Yeah.
Then you had South Park, then you had Family Guy, now you got Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
It's definitely that more crudish humor, yeah. But that's where we're at in civilization now.
It is,
that
yeah.
type of stuff is quite funny.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's just, yeah.
Yeah, civilization, this is your fault.
Yeah. And so Rick takes Morty on adventures throughout the multiverse. So they go to all these weird different alien planets, which allows for this really good creativity to just like blossom and spungle. And it's like...
Where can I watch this? Because I haven't seen
Netflix.
It is
Netflix?
On Netflix.
Yep, the first... So season 3 is going right now.
Yeah.
So season 1, 2, and 3 are all on Netflix.
Yeah.
It actually started out as a Back to the Future parody. So Dan Harmon actually conceived this as a Back to the Future parody.
Well, that's it, because it's... It's Marty McFly is where Morty comes from, and I'm blanking on what's the
doctor's name? Oh, Doc Brown.
Professor, yeah, okay, yep.
Doc Brown, I can't remember his first name.
Well done, everyone.
What's shocking.
I'll be honest with you, I've steered away from this series for a very long time because it was first kind of brought to my attention due to some guys who were, I think there's some guys at uni who were generally just being a bit rude and crass and everything. And they're like, this show. And I was kind of like, well, if you like it, I'm kind of not going to go near it. And
yeah,
it was only very recently that, which I understand is very hypocritical of me. I've watched some other stuff, which is not the greatest, but it was only recently brought to my attention that Dan Harmon made it.
Yes.
And so, and when I found that out, I was like, oh, well, I am definitely going to have a look at this now because I love Community. Like, Community was one of my favorite TV shows. And so, yeah, when I found out that he made this, I was like, well, okay, well, now I'm going to give it a go. And then, obviously, yourself, Zach, and a few other people have raved about this show to me.
Yeah.
And I've been like, okay, maybe I should actually jump on the Rick and Morty train and see how it goes. So, I'm actually very excited to see it, but I haven't seen anything yet.
And it's not just like the show's stupidly funny. The writing in it is so well done as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the family dynamics, there's some really great overtones about how this family is dealing with Rick being an alcoholic and just taking Morty on adventures and stuff like that. So you have you have Morty's family and Rick's family. So you've got Morty's mum. That's actually Rick's granddaughter. Daughter. And then you've got Rick's dad, which is Jerry. It's his brother-in-law. Jerry's just this super slacker, has no self-confidence whatsoever. Beth, the wife, she's a horse surgeon. And then they've also...
Very specific.
And then they've got a daughter called, Flip Summer. And she's like your typical kind of 21st century girl and stuff like that.
A millennial.
So, millennial girl, yeah. So they play around with that family dynamic so much. And... There's so many random characters that you just learn to love in this show.
Yeah.
But as I said, the writing between all of them, there's a real big focus on the family dynamic and how Rick taking Morty throughout these adventures, you know, puts a stress on the family and how that family relationship works. So, I mean, it seems funny, but they actually do it in there's some quite serious and dark overtones, particularly when you get to like season 2 and 3.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's it. Like, as I said, with Community and the writing for that, and I just thought that Dan Harmon was, well, really, we have a look at, what was the gas leak year of Community? Season 4 that no one wants to talk about. I think that stopped even in the show, they don't talk about it. They just refer to it as the gas leak year. You notice where if when he's not on the table, that's where the show kind of declined. His writing is really good. And you're right. He takes these very serious issues and he looks at them within a comedy context. But you get to the end of the show and you're kind of like, I had a good time. I laughed a lot. And now I'm really thinking about this.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Very good. Yeah,
would recommend. As I said, it's on Australian Netflix, season 1, 2 on there. Season 3 is going at the moment. You definitely binge watch it.
Yep.
It's definitely, yeah.
It's on my list.
It's on your list, yeah.
All right. Well, let's move
bad
on.
Bad binger.
Let's move on to the present now. This week we are looking, or this episode, I should say, because we're not so much weekly. This episode, we are looking at The Defenders, Marvel's ultimate mashup, or not mashup, sorry, team up of their four IPs at the moment. So we've got Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist.
Mm.
And it's about how they all team up together to save New York.
Arkan, just quickly, what do we think of all of those shows individually?
I love.
Are we sure we want to go down that path?
Just very quickly. Just like very quickly.
I love Daredevil.
Both Daredevil's brilliant.
Yep.
I would definitely agree.
Jessica Jones, brilliant.
I thought Jessica Jones was very, very dark, but yeah. I thought it was good. It was like a not a classic kind of superhero thing. So I love that as well.
Yep. Luke Cage is where I started to see the cracks.
I really enjoyed Luke Cage as well.
It was towards the end. I was just like, this is getting a bit much now. Right.
And then we all hated Iron Fist. Yes.
Look, I didn't hate Iron Fist.
I didn't enjoy it.
I hated the writing of Danny Rand's character in Iron Fist.
Yep.
So Danny Rand is the main character in Iron Fist. Yeah, he's just very whiny and expositional.
Danny Rand.
I'm Danny Rand.
I'm the immortal Iron Fist.
And the hand killed my parents.
Protector of Kalun. You don't know who I am?
Like he says, it's literally like he says it to everyone. But anyway, so that's kind of where we sat with the four characters in their individual shows. What do we think of The Defenders, where they all come together?
I enjoyed it.
Yep.
I enjoyed it. It was just like we were saying before, the first couple episodes, they were hard to sit through. A lot of talking, a lot of, I don't know what's going on, and a lot more talking. And then eventually, when they all finally got together, that's when the show started to progress in the way that we wanted it to go.
Yep, I definitely agree. That first episode was pretty brutal.
Yes.
That didn't meet up at all. I reckon, yeah, once you get to episode 4, it actually starts to get really good.
Once you get to the halfway mark.
Which is obviously not ideal, especially for an 8-episode miniseries.
Yeah, so there's only 8 episodes in this series. The other seasons have 12, is it? Or 13? 13 episodes. So that it is significantly shorter than the others.
Yeah. But no, I did enjoy it towards the end.
You know why it was shorter, though, don't you?
No, go on.
Because the reason they had to do 8 episodes was because by the time they were finishing this... Luke Cage was going off to do season 2. Jessica Jones was going off to do season 2. Like they had to structure it in a way so once they were done with their scenes, they were off doing what they had to do.
They're
so
just
they
about
couldn't
to
do
start
13. Yeah.
Daredevil
season 3
in October. I feel that's a bit of poor planning. Like
it's not poor planning.
It's a Netflix show and another Netflix show conflicting. Like,
yeah.
Surely, you know, anyway.
I think it was always planned. You can't make a 13 episode out of what that show was.
I actually...
It would have been too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Because those first 4 episodes were a long slog. Imagine 13.
this is what I was actually going to talk about. I think this show really shows how Netflix is redefining the TV show genre.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, like, think about back in my day, where you used to watch a TV show each week. If you had those first three episodes... You wouldn't be tuning in.
That's true.
You'd be gone.
Yeah.
The only reason they know they can get away with that is because they know that the majority of people, I don't have any statistics to prove this, but the people who are watching Netflix TV shows are usually binge watching.
Yep.
And if it's something that's really anticipated, like The Defenders, they know that there's going to be a lot of people who are probably going to smash the first 4 episodes and they can get away with spending 3 of them.
Mm. Well, how long have they had us now? Like what, 3 years now? Watching these shows?
Yep. Oh, I think 2015 or 14. Which one was
it? I do have it here. Daredevil season 2 was 2016.
That was last year, yeah.
I have a feeling...
So Daredevil season 1 would have been 2015.
Yeah, 2015.
Because season 1 for Daredevil was 15. Then 16 was Daredevil 2, Jessica Jones.
Luke Cage.
And Luke Cage. Yep.
And this year's just been Iron Fist and Defenders.
Yeah, so it's three years that they've had us on the hook now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've all been, we knew where it was going.
Yeah.
It was going to lead up to.
Well, yeah, it was announced at the very start.
Yeah, it was going to lead to the Defenders. So that's why you sit through those brutal three episodes and wait for everyone finally to meet each other and then start fighting back to back. It's, we're definitely nurtured.
Look, I thought it was great. Another thing, though, that I noticed is that it really made it obvious to me that I was waiting for the Defenders so that I could see Daredevil.
Oh, yes. Totally. Totally.
That's all you're ever waiting for.
I was like, yep, I'm super keen for Daredevil. Like, Luke Cage would be cool. Jessica Jones would be great. Iron Fist will be there. But Daredevil is what I was tuning in for.
Especially for him wearing the outfit as well. How is he going to put it on?
I mean, it probably did help that the actual Daredevil season 2 showrunners actually wrote and produced this show.
Yeah.
I was not aware of that. There you go.
Was it Marco Ramirez and Diego Pierre?
Yeah.
Probably saying their last name's wrong, as I do.
Petrie? Yeah. Maybe? P-E-T-R-I-E? Anyway. I thought it was very good.
What did we think to the storyline and the antagonists?
Okay.
I think for me, it wasn't as engaging as I wanted it to be purely because that Iron Fist was such a centerpiece of the story.
Yeah.
And I think when you have Finn Jones, who I'm sure is a respectable actor in some shows he's been in, unfortunately, I don't feel like he's stricken that balance right. Not yet. Of course, there is time for Iron Fist. In here, he's just too whiny, too expositional.
So expositional.
Too gritty for his character as well. I feel like every scene, every episode, except for episode 4, which I'll get to, he's always just got a frown on his face. It's like, dude, like, just have a smile. Like, I don't think he really understands. I mean, I'm not too much of an Iron Fist aficionado, but
in the comics, I'm not either.
I understand that he's at least somewhat charismatic and lighthearted. Mm-hmm.
See, you say that, but then the comic book I gave you, the Immortal on of Iron Fist.
Yep.
He is quite broody and sitting on his own, meditating a lot. But that's just for that series. I don't know what he's like throughout the rest of it. I've always, my view on Iron Fist has always been he's quite quirky and charismatic he's cocky.
Yeah.
You know, because he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
But this one, like you said, he's always got a frown on his face. Yeah. And he's like, I am Danny Rand the Immortal. He'll tell it to the average Joe walking down the street.
Yeah. They even mention that in the series. They're like, he will say that to anyone.
Yeah. You know, which I don't think Danny Rand did in the comic books. He was quite to himself. And this is what he did in the dark at night.
Mm.
No one knew about it. I mean,
that could just come to the Scott Buck, the showrunner of Iron Fist, is not really writing it properly, maybe.
But. Maybe. Do you know what I would love to see in Iron Fist season 2?
Mm-hmm.
Now, so let's think about this from like a realistic...
He would actually
realistic,
get his costume?
Well, maybe that would be
just
very cool.
Just wearing
a... but no. So he's... So obviously his parents died in a plane crash when he was... Was it 10?
Yeah, right about.
Anyway,
10,
when he
7,
was,
10, yeah.
Doesn't matter. When he was young and he was raised by monks and everything like that, he's never properly gone through the process of essentially dealing with their death, and he's never actually been kind of raised in the real world. So he's, like, it makes sense that he's kind of psychologically still at a 10-year-old's level because he hasn't gone through the process of that, coming to terms with it and healing it. So, like, when you think about it that way, it does kind of make sense that he's always banging on about, I'm the Immortal Iron Fist and I'm going to avenge my parents, because he never really dealt with it. So what I would love to see is in Iron Fist season 2, them actually dealing with that process and him coming to terms and him basically turning into an adult, because at the moment he is still a 10-year-old in a 20-something, 30-year-old body. So look, that's what I would really like to see, because I think the general consensus from what I read around and online is that no one's really liking the fact that he's so whiny.
Yeah.
But it makes sense if he's never really come to terms with what happened.
What I did like, and I thought would develop more but didn't, was in episode 1, he has this flashback to Kun Lun, some sort of vision, some out-of-body experience where he walks in Kun Lun and all the monks are just dead because... what happened?
The
monks got slaughtered, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'm like, maybe he could, you know, he's going through them and he gets turned around by himself and he's like, you let this happen. And he's like, no, no, I didn't. He starts freaking out. He doesn't know what to do. And I'm like, that would have set up such a good character arc, but they never mention, they mention it once, but they never build on that again in the whole entire series.
Yeah.
It's just him, oh, I'm the key to this wall in the hands building or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So while we're still in spoiler-free territory at the moment, for anyone who is not entirely caught up, Iron Fist plays a very key role in The Defenders. So,
key role?
So yeah, so it's worth noting that you probably can't skip Iron Fist if you want to watch The Defenders.
You could watch like a YouTube video that gives you a rundown.
Surely. Well, that's true.
He does tell you enough throughout the series who he is, so you kind of get the gist
of
who Danny Rand is.
But yeah, so yeah, look, I enjoyed it. I think it was good. But going back to the antagonists, I think they were a bit weak.
It could have been better.
Well, let's take... So the main antagonist, well, one of, because there's kind of a few, is Alexandra, which is played by Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
So, like, brilliant actress. And she's kind of pitched to be, like, their big kind of the leader of the hand. And she's not really developed that well, I don't think. What do you think?
The first... episode where she sat on the bench feeding the pigeons and what's the chow
Lady
Madam
Gao sits down and she turns around and says feed the birds because they're hungry.
Yeah,
you've never seen that so far in all these series, because Madam Gao's always been like this person of power.
She's been the top dog.
Yeah, she's been the top dog, and now you've got this other person telling her what to do. I remember turning to you and your wife saying, no one tells her what to do. Who is this woman?
Yeah.
You know, like, that really struck us back. Then as the episodes progress, you see all the other fingers of the hand, and she's kind of just a part of this group, and they all kind of overpower each other at any chance they get.
And there's no real reason.
And no one's really scared of her.
Tell me what you think. I don't think there's any reason that's presented to see why she's so big and bad.
Yeah.
Like, why is she in
charge? Yeah, it's very true. When given really no context to how she became a leader of the hand, I mean, it's referred to like, oh, she always had the hand from the start, but we're not given really any information on what she did to lead the hand.
Yeah.
I feel like she's also very human in this series as well. Like, in the first episode, they start out with her being told that she has cancer, I assume, of some sort, and that she's going to die.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're given reason to relate to her quite a bit, because we don't see her doing really any too violent acts or anything like that. We just see her kind of going around listening to classical music or having dinner. She's very normal human, but she's very cold and calculating and stuff like that. So I think that's as far as her characterization was. She was very... cold, calculating, like, if you cross her, she'll, like, mess you up, but they never
give evidence of that. Exactly, like, they never show why she's so
feared. Feared and renowned.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, you've kind of put me in a crossroads here, to be honest, because I thought she was okay, but now you've said this, I'm like...
Oh, look, I don't think there's anything, like, there's nothing wrong with her, her role, there's nothing wrong with her acting, I just think that the setup of her character within...
I needed to feel that fear that they held for her.
Yeah, and I think they should have. They maybe should have developed that maybe a bit more, but
especially like one of those scenes where all the hand finally meets together, the five fingers of the hand, and they're all sat at the table. You don't buy that they're scared of this woman. They talk down to her. They tell her to keep quiet.
And they're like band up like, together. Hey?
Yeah, and they're like, "You've had your turns. Now it's our turn." Like, if this person was said leader, they wouldn't dare, you know, because goodbye.
Yeah, goodbye.
Yeah,
goodbye.
Considering we've seen in previous series how Bakudu is really dangerous and how Madam Gao is extremely powerful.
Yeah.
Like, so you've seen these things happen already and you know that they aren't to be messed with and then they won't touch her. It's kind of like, well, okay, well, why?
Who was the other guy in the hand? White Hat?
Name's White Hat.
He scared me more than the other three of them ever did.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So that was
just like the way he used to sit there and...
Yeah, he was very brooding. You'd
sit there, he'd just stare at you and just, what I did like, though, with Nice Touch, was the color correction at the start of the series.
Yes, I was going to mention that.
You'll notice that they've all kind of got their distinct colors. So Luke Cage, yellow. Jessica Jones, bluish, purple. Daredevil Red and then Iron Fist Green.
Yeah.
So, at this, particularly in the first episode, when we're cutting between them to see what their lives are like, which I didn't mind. Mm. Like, it was extremely expositional,
yeah.
But it was cool kind of seeing them in their lives.
Yeah. Which all got I could that take for one episode, not
yes.
three.
Yes, of course, of course.
Yeah.
But they've all got their own tints about them, which kind of very much distincts them. But then...
Mm. It helps you actually realize who, like, what scenes you're looking at. It keeps them...
It does, and it gives it personality as well, I feel like. Yeah. And it carries on from their respective individual series. No, that wasn't a word, sorry.
Sorry.
Not a word.
Yes. But towards the end of the show, that color correction or temperature disappears between them as individuals because they all start to join as a team, and it's just like one just normal color temp and correction. So I thought that was a
nice little touch.
Nice little arty feature.
Yeah.
There you go. So if you didn't notice that first time you watched it, or if you're going to go and watch it, keep an eye out for it. They do actually, they change the tint. The color temperature of the scenes, depending on whose character is actually involved.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the fight scenes as well in them? Because I feel like the ones that worked well were the ones with the long takes and cuts. I feel like, particularly end of episode 3 and the one in the finale, the other fights, though, that had quite a lot of cuts, like 10 cuts like per like second, I was like,
Yeah, I agree.
I did enjoy the fights. It was good to see Iron Fist get his butt whooped by Luke Cage. That was good to see.
Yeah, that was satisfying.
Or even just giving him better choreography, to be honest.
Yeah. But like the hallways and stuff were still as good as they always are.
Okay.
It was good to see him working as a team. The only issue I had with all the fight scenes was the final fight scene where they all line up.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. Where they all line up to fight the final battle. Mm. And that, I don't know what that rap song that was that kicked in, but it didn't flow.
It was
just kind of like they fight and someone just went click and turned it on.
That was a very odd choice of music. The final
I don't mind the choice of music, but like it didn't blend into the scene
at
all.
I liked it, but it just,
I think it worked well. I just was like, it was kind of like, okay.
Yeah, okay. I guess this song's playing now.
All right, anything else? Oh, Elektra.
Elektra, yeah. Yeah,
so...
Which... I'm going to say now how Elektra died in Daredevil season 2, how she gets put in the coffin.
Yep.
And then how she gets put in the coffin in this rendition, two totally different scenes.
Oh, well, I didn't notice that.
Yep.
Because if you notice in Daredevil season 2, they put her in the coffin in that pit where all those kids were being drained and stuff like that. That's where they put her back in.
She had no goo in there as well.
Yeah, no goo. And then this season, or this series, there's all these candles like down this long walkway. And there she is getting put into the coffin. It's like, those are two totally different places that she's been.
Continuity, Marvel. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. Get it together.
I was just like, come on. If I can notice that.
Unbelievable.
Anyone can notice that.
Yeah. Well, look, overall, though, like, I mean, we've kind of been banging on about the things we don't like.
Yeah.
Overall, I do think this is actually a really good series. I'm very glad that they did it. I am always happy when they do team-ups like this.
Yeah.
So, like, when, you know, the Avengers came through and... even things like Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, like, I love it when you've got a host of good characters working together. And so, yeah, like, I think if you do like the Marvel movies, Marvel TV series, or even the Marvel movies, definitely give this a watch.
Yep.
Really, really good. And yeah, I think it brings them all together in this series in New York, and so that they aren't as separated as they were.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I think as well, we kind of have it on a little bit of it. It's because we have quite high expectations as well. Because they're, aside from Iron Fist, they're all of a reasonably real high standard.
Yeah.
And they all bring their own different flavors as well to the table.
And I'd like to say I called it about Elektra.
Not being the real villain.
Not being the real villain, but when she comes back, she's not going to know who anyone is.
Yeah.
And I called that, and I am a genius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finally, I do like the setup for their own individual seasons at the end of the series, which I think, I mean, obviously is going to happen when you have a team-up miniseries.
We're going to discuss the ending?
Do you mean the post-credit scene?
No, the ending.
No, like of Daredevil or of... Yeah, so I'm probably most excited about that, to be honest.
3, 2, 1.
Spoilers.
Daredevil dies.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's what you're led to believe.
Yes.
And then it cuts to a... monastery or church?
I believe it's a...
It'd be like a
nunnery?
A nunnery, yeah.
A nunnery. Yep. There's a nun sat on a bed.
Yep.
And she realizes there's movement behind her on the bed, and lo and behold, Daredevil, Matt Murdock's laying on the bed, and she turns around and says, go get Maggie. Matt's awake.
Yep.
Maggie is her mum.
Who's Maggie? Is his mum.
It's his mum.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, at least according to the comic series.
Yeah. They can't change that.
Well, they might. But yeah, so it is...
It'll be an uproar.
It is, yes, it is believed that Maggie, this nun, is Matt Murdock's mother, which is taken out of the Frank Miller Born Again comic series. Yeah, and but yeah, it'll be... Look, I'm really excited to see how they go. The Hand would not have been my first choice as like an overarching antagonist group for the Defenders, but yeah, I'm excited to see where they go now.
They had to end it somehow with the Hand.
And they've kind of wrapped it up a bit now, so yeah, I'm excited to see where they go, and
It's good. Jessica Jones is going back doing her little investigations. Luke Cage going back to Harlem with Misty. Iron Fist is...
Watching the city
for Daredevil. Yeah, maybe
that's what he asked him to do.
He might get a costume.
Yeah. Well, that actually happens in the comics. Iron Fist does.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Well, in the comics originally, I believe
Matt
it was
left,
to...
didn't he? He just left.
No, I think in the comics, Matt gets put in jail for some reason.
Right. Yeah.
And Iron Fist takes on the Daredevil mantles so that people don't make the connection that Matt Murdock is Daredevil.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. We'll see how that goes. It'll be good to see those team ups
and the post credit scene.
Yep,
which you did not watch.
No, I did not watch it. We finished watching it at like 1 a.m. and we're like, okay, going to bed. Just as soon as the credits roll, we're like, yep, cool, turn off, bye. And then
I think it was like an hour later. Yeah, I messaged
I get this message in the middle of the night from Andrew being like, did you see the scene? And I was like, no, like chumps, we turned it off.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us what it was?
It was the Punisher teaser for his series.
Coming out later this year.
Yeah, later this year. He was just saying a whole bunch of dialogue and...
I was smashing concrete.
Smashing the concrete with his great grunt that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And then walks away and it's the skull, the Punisher symbol in the ground.
So good.
Yeah.
So still not quite sure what's going to happen with that series, but
I'm
excited.
Very excited.
But not Defenders. Good show. It was good. Well, enjoyable. It was the thing... The best part of it, I'm sorry, we're kind of hurrying on, like we should wrap it up, but it was, I really did like the interaction between the characters as well, particularly episode 4, where it's just set in that diner, the Royal Dragon, where they're all kind of theorying out everybody, everyone's got their own motives and stuff like that, just the chemistry and the interaction between that was so nice, because they could have just gone, oh, let's all be friends and fight the Hand, Matt Murdock's
they
like,
didn't want to, no.
Yeah, Matt Murdock's like, no, I have people to protect. And
he wouldn't take off the scarf. Exactly, that was like a good long 15 minute, like, I'm not taking it off. Like,
and Jessica Jones is just like, nah, stuff this, I'm just a reporter. And then,
I saw this thing online, last thing, where like it's Stick in the diner and he's like, you guys have to all band together to save New York. And they're like, no.
Yeah.
And then they all find out, they're like, oh, wait, you know Claire? You know Claire? We all know Claire? All right. Let's defend her. We'll become the defend hers.
Yeah.
And they're like, Which also, this had to be pointed out to me, absolute last thing now. It's never mentioned that Matt and Claire know each other.
It's true.
In the entire of Defenders.
It's just
and that's
to.
Where they started.
Yeah. Have you seen one of the images for Luke Cage season 2 that's come out?
Nope.
So, you know Misty Knight, the cop, and she gets her arm chopped off.
Yep. That she gets a robotic arm.
Yep, that happens in the comics.
Yep.
She's got a robotic arm in this image that's been
Sick.
Released. So
that's what we want.
But it depends on who gave her the robotic arm, because she got the robotic arm from Tony Stark in the comics.
She's getting it from
I mean, they have tied the TV and movie series somewhat together. It's possible it could happen.
It'll come from Rand Industries. It has to.
Rand. Oh, yeah, because
she's in the Rand Hospital.
Maybe.
It'll come from Rand, I think.
All right, well...
Future.
Defenders.
Go watch it.
Highly recommend it.
Yes.
Go check it out.
Yes.
Right, into the time machine, off to the future. What have we got coming up that we are excited about?
I'll start off.
Yep.
So I've got a film.
Look at you with your notes. You're so prepared. Better than me.
Mate.
Yep, so what's coming up?
A film called Suburbicon. Now, Suburbicon is coming out.
Matt Damon?
Matt Damon, yeah,
it is. It is? Oh, I've seen the trailer for this.
Yes.
It looks funny.
So, Suburbicon is basically about this perfect suburbia. Picture 1959, perfectly manicured lawns, nuclear family.
Yep.
A home invasion rattles a quiet family town. So basically, a home invasion happens to Matt Damon's character, and he begins to unravel and decipher this underbelly of crime, deceit, this world of drugs and stuff like that. So, I'll give you a couple of stat lines. So Matt Damon, Julianne Moore, sorry, and Oscar Isaacs are probably the big three headers for this film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is off a script written by the Coen brothers, so Joel and Ethan Coen.
Yep.
Written films and directed films such as Fargo, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, True Grit. George Clooney also helped pen the script.
And he's directing, isn't he?
He's directing
it. Yeah, well. Isn't he the director?
Yeah. He is the director, yes. So George Clooney has also directed The Monuments Men and The Ideals of March. Monuments Men was well received. Ideals of March was well received. Monuments Men was a bit mixed.
Okay.
Wasn't he in Monuments Men as well?
Yes,
he was. In both of those films, yeah. But it looks like a very Coen Brothers-esque film. Yeah. Lots of...
It seems quite funny.
Lots of dark humour and genre mashing as well, which I think the Coen Brothers do quite a bit, is where they take a genre and they put their own spin on it in a way. And this is obviously the genre of your perfect 1960s sitcom with your nuclear family and stuff that. Were you going to mention something?
I was just going to say, I am not super familiar with the Coen Brothers' works. Mm. Like, I've seen True Grit. I saw Oh Brother, Where Art Thou a very long time ago. Yeah,
I might have seen it.
I'm not super up there. But I had a look at this and I'm like, this looks really good. It looks kind of very funny and very, you're right. Very that quirky. Mix of like, here's a very serious situation with, like, you know, murder and intrigue and, you know, the mob and everything like that. But then they cut it together with these very comical kind of, like, at one point she's, like, using a roller to roll up pills. Like, I don't know if they're painkillers, I think they are. Yeah. And she's, like, just scraping them onto his peanut butter sandwich.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
So, it's those kind of weird things like that. I think it looks really good.
It does. It's set in 1959 and it should be coming out, I don't know the exact date.
In the United States, October 27th.
Yeah, around about there. Yeah. So obviously in that Oscar time.
Yeah.
But I'm actually quite interested in it because George Clooney's directing it. Which I haven't seen any of George Clooney's films that he's directed. But yeah, from the trailers, I love the aesthetic, that 1950s aesthetic. Lots of block colors. You know, you got the, as I said, nuclear family. And just that Coen Brothers dark humor where it's so quirky and it looks quite funny. Yes.
It is rated R in America. I don't know what that's going to translate here in Australia. We
MA
have
15 plus.
Yeah,
it's
probably
usually an MA 15 plus when it comes to Australia. But I mean, it might not be. I would assume it's MA.
It is, even from the trailer. You get the gist that
yes,
MA stands for mature audiences, by the way.
America does have much harsher ratings than we do in Australia.
Yeah.
That looks very interesting. I'm intrigued.
Oh, there you go.
I'll go on next. Recently they released a trailer, sticking with the Netflix theme for me, for The Crown Season 2.
Ooh.
Have either of you seen the first season?
I'm afraid not.
No, unfortunately not, but I have seen the trailers for both of them.
So it's created by Peter Morgan, who he also created The Queen, the movie, which was the Oscar award winning one.
It won Oscars?
I think so.
Cate Blanchett, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
He also did The Other Bowling Girl. He's done a lot of works around...
I did Frost Queen Nixon. Elizabeth. Oh,
okay. Yes, he did Frost Nixon as well, yep.
Last King of Scotland. Oh, okay.
It is a huge budget series for Netflix. It's got an estimated $156 million budget. $5 million per episode.
Dude.
It is one of the most expensive TV shows ever made.
It's like Game of Thrones level. That's insane.
And it was... two seasons were commissioned and an additional four were planned and intended before the first episode had even been completed or aired. And they plan to bring the entire series, so six seasons, up to current day.
Wow.
Now,
What's it about first?
Oh, sorry. Yep. Yes. So it's basically about Queen Elizabeth II, the current reigning monarch of the United Kingdom and the Commonwealth, and basically her monarchy. Basically, so it starts off with her. So the first couple of episodes are about how her father dies. I'll touch on this in a sec. I know nothing about British history and the monarchy, which is why I'm so interested in this show. But yeah, so she ascends to power after her father died, and it's, you know, post-World War II, and So she's basically another main character in season one is Winston Churchill, who's played by what's his name? He was Lord Farquaad. He was
John Lithgow.
John Lithgow. Thank you very much.
Oh.
Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah.
yeah. So he plays Winston Churchill, and he is incredible in that as well. And yeah, it's basically about how that happens and how she's thrust into power and how it affects her marriage and how it affects her family and her sister and her husband and her kids and all that kind of thing. And it's so, so well done. Like, the production value is incredible.
Nah, critics love this.
It is so good. Now, I initially, like, if you told me, oh, The Crown, it's about the, you know, Queen Elizabeth II's monarchy, I'd be like, eh, whatever. And then I started watching it, and it is so good. And this is going to sound really stupid, but I know nothing about British history. So for me, even though it's all historical, I have no idea what's going on. Like, it's all brand new to me. And so I'm watching it with my wife, and she's like, oh, this is the time when blah, blah. And I was like, when what happened? No spoilers. Come on. She's like, it's history. It's not a spoiler. Yeah. And I'm like, for me, it is. And so, yeah, I would look, the first season is really good. I really did not expect to like it, and I was pleasantly surprised. It has a very good cast. It has Matt Smith, the one of the old doctors, as
8.8 out of 10.
Prince Philip. It has Claire Foy as Queen Elizabeth, as I said, John Lithgow as Winston Churchill, a handful of other
great people, British actors.
Ben Miles as Peter Townsend. And look, it's, as I said, high budget, great writing, fantastic acting, really, really good. Highly recommend it. Very excited to see season two.
There you go.
Yep. Sweet.
It's something new for me, that's for sure.
Yeah, get onto it.
Yeah, so mine, there's no trailer or anything out. It's more just news dropping that's happened at the moment, and that's Warner Brothers taking on Martin Scorsese to do its own story of the Joker.
Like a little origin story.
Like an origin story, yeah. Mm. And I think news dropped today or yesterday, whenever it was, that they're beelining for Leonardo DiCaprio to play the Joker.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is there any response from Jared Leto? Because
yes, he's not happy.
Well, I think the premise of this, because obviously Martin Scorsese is producing, if I'm correct. And
I thought he was directing.
No, I feel Todd Phillips is writing and directing.
Okay.
He's trying to get out of the comedy genre, apparently. He's been trying to do it for ages.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a tad confusing. So basically what Warner Brothers is trying to do is trying to create like almost Elseworlds tales.
Yeah.
Like tales that are not the in main DCEU continuity, but they're their own singular stories, which is extremely popular amongst comics.
Yeah, so there is, just for those who are not as familiar, DC have a series which are called Elseworlds, which basically takes your regular characters and puts them in different scenarios. So one of the first ever was called Gotham by Gaslight, which is Batman in Victorian England.
Yeah.
They had another one where it was all the characters in...
Which they're making into an animated film, aren't they?
Yep. Yes, they are, actually, yes. Yep. So yeah, they take these... your regular characters and put them in different scenarios. Anyway, keep going, sorry.
I didn't have much more.
Oh, okay.
You guys know a lot more about Martin Scorsese and stuff than I ever will, so.
Martin Scorsese is a flipping genius, man.
Yeah.
His films are phenomenal.
He is outstanding. So for those who are not as familiar, I'm just pulling up some of the things that he has directed.
I can rattle it off right now.
Go
Silence, The Departed, Wolf of Wall Street, Raging Bull, Taxi Driver, Goodfellas. What else is he done in the 90s?
Hugo. I really enjoyed
The
Hugo.
Last Temptation of Christ. What's it called? The Power, Money, Greed, I don't know, something about Paul. flip.
Aviator.
Oh, of course. What am I? Gangs of New York.
Gangs of New York.
Gangs of New York as well.
Casino. Yeah, so very well accomplished director.
He also, I'm trying to look it up exactly. He also directed a... That's right. He directed Michael Jackson's Bad video clip.
Yes, yeah. so the main thing I've heard about this is that they want the origin story to be set in a real kind of gritty Gotham City, like a Raging Bull or Taxi Driver, of course, which Martin Scorsese has done, hence why he's producing, and some sort of like Joker as like an up-and-coming kind of gang boss and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So do you reckon they're going to follow the story of...
the Red Hood?
Yeah, or the original Red Hood and Joker with that. Do you reckon?
Look, maybe. I mean, it really is all up to... But then
would Batman play a part?
Yeah. I mean, it's really all up to, I feel like, Martin Scorsese's interpretation, and Todd Phillips is writing it. He's co-writing it with the guy who wrote 8 Mile, Scott Silver, I think his name is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so really, whatever... I mean, it's kind of silly for me to say this, but whatever they really decide upon is what's going to happen. Yeah. I feel like they will kind of go that route, maybe of him starting out as like the failed comedian, like a Killing Joke, a comic book series where Joker's this kind of failed comedian, obviously becomes Red Hood, falls in a vault of acid, becomes a Joker, and I feel like from there they could put...
Sorry, for those of you who aren't sure, this is the short condensed version of the original Joker origin.
Yeah.
So yeah, sorry, carry on.
You know, up-and-coming mob boss, gang boss, kind of building his gang reach, whatever.
Yeah.
But I also heard that there might be something to do like him as a troubled youth almost.
Okay.
Always having a smile on his face and stuff like that. These are, of course, just leaks. So take this with a grain of salt because we're not going to
know. We don't know how true it is yet.
Yeah. This is all speculation.
Yes. But I actually, when I heard this news, I'm not going to lie, I got pretty excited.
Yeah, me too.
I was like, to grab a big name like Martin Scorsese producing it, I mean, producing isn't directing at the end of the day, but. Yeah. Still having his kind of his expertise and his overall just cinema wisdom over.
Absolutely.
He's very, very accomplished. And so it's, I was just going to say as well, I'm less excited now that I've just found out that he's not directing, because I think him directing would be
better.
His direction is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But obviously Martin Scorsese would not be your normal kind of producer that's kind of behind the scenes. He would definitely have a more active role in its production.
Quite like Ridley Scott as well.
Yeah, and things like when Steven Spielberg is producing something, it's not just like, oh, I'm funding it, or I'm, you know, whatever. He's an accomplished filmmaker as well. And so with them behind the helm as a producer, you have a bit more of a assurance of how it's going to kind of turn out, but, you know, you have a bit more faith, so to speak.
Yeah. And interesting as well is that DC are already trying to plan to do these Elseworlds kind of films, which is like for comic book audiences, we would get it, but mainstream audiences, I feel like without proper contextual information, they'd get quite confused by this. So, well, I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
I totally agree. It'll get quite confusing.
If that's true and they are trying to do Elseworlds things, I really don't think it would be a good idea.
Because they're trying to create this banner, apparently. Apparently, it's unannounced as of yet, but apparently they want to start this whole Elseworlds banner with all these different interpretations of characters.
Yeah, I think they need to solidify their characters first on the big screen.
Before they start.
So, for instance, I think that would be, like, it would be... See, I was going to say it might be good for Batman, but I'm even thinking of it now, and if a Batman film came out, it's like, oh, it's Batman in, you know, Victorian England... I think people would still be kind of like, what? Why? Like, this is just...
Why?
I don't know.
The big question is just, why? Why do we need these Elseworlds? Why not put all that money, energy, and effort into making the DCEU a bit better?
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
Who knows? Maybe their plan is for, like, 2022 or something like that. And
maybe.
Yeah. I mean, which wouldn't, like, seem off by any chance. But I feel like, as Tyson said, you've got to solidify the DCEU first, which I feel like it's on its way to. Hopefully Justice League... is good.
Yep.
To be blunt. But
fingers are crossed.
Yeah, definitely interesting. So, interesting development.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Especially since, sorry, side note.
No,
they've got so many films planned in development as well. Have you seen, like, the full list of films they've got in development?
I haven't seen the full list, but if you look at the new banner that they have when that Wonder Woman started, and you see all the characters in there, you don't... It's the same as Marvel. They don't put their characters in the intro video unless they're planning on using them.
Yeah, it's like this slate of, like, you've got Suicide Squad 2, Flashpoint,
which has been delayed. Suicide Squad 2 because Will Smith he's too busy.
He's a busy man. Shazam, Matt Reeves' Batman, Green Lantern Corps. Then you've got stuff like Harley Quinn and Joker standalone film.
Wait, sorry, they're doing a Green Lantern Corps movie?
Green Lantern Corps.
Green Lantern Corps. Three lanterns.
Yeah.
Wow. Al Jordan, John Stewart, and who's the other one?
Kyle Rayner.
Kyle Rayner.
Okay, sorry, keep going.
Oh, flip, I've had a mind blank now.
sorry.
That's all good. Like Cyborg.
Flash,
Gotham City Sirens, Nightwing. Batgirl, Joss Whedon. But there's like so many films out.
That is a lot.
It's quite hectic. I feel like, I mean, because you're always, when Marvel's done it so seamlessly and so well, I feel like they're just going to try and pull any stops to be as good as them, but maybe I think they need to slow down.
Yeah, they need to slow down and then take a beat and see where they can fix it up. Because like I said the other week when we did our last cast, I think I still feel they're one movie behind from it being a good story flow.
Okay.
Yeah, because Man of Steel, then we went straight into
BVS.
BVS, Wonder Woman. If they'd done Man of Steel, Batman, then BVS, I would have bought that more because it gave you more time to broaden that, how everyone's connected and the world that they live in.
I think it's also studio executives as well. They're, you know, they want to play catch up to Marvel. They want to make sure, they want to get the money in. They want to profit their business and stuff like that. So
All right. Well, very good.
Food for thought.
Anything else before we wrap up?
I've got nothing.
Nope.
Good. All right. Well, thanks for joining us again on Screen Review Time Warp. Tell all your friends about us. Give us a rating and review. Tell everyone. And we will see you next time.
I'll follow us on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. And we are on Twitter, SRTW Podcast. And until next time, we'll see you next time on Screen Review Time Warp.
Goodbye.
Catch ya.
Started making trouble in my neighborhood.
Got in one little fight.
My mom got scared.
She said, yeah, never with your auntie and uncle in my life.